Hello, and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I am Noah, and I am, as always, joined by my co-host,
Kayla.
Yeah, that's you.
It is.
How are you doing today? We're talking about some three movies now. Are you excited to jump into this one?
Oh, I am stoked.
Yeah. Well, we've done, three reviews?
Yeah, recently? Three Those new are our movie last reviews. Episodes? So now
we're kicking it back old school.
Yeah, talking about
baby.
Something that is not, maybe, I mean, it's somewhat newer. Like, it's a little closer to this time than, High School Musical was.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell by the music. So, well, we are today joined by a guest. This is Purnell, who was on our triple feature. Was that our second one we ever did?
Yeah, I think so.
Our second triple feature? And we actually were just talking about the 13th year in the last episode because we were doing Luca. And yeah, so it's real full circle moment.
You've watched Luca, correct, Purnell?
I have, and I loved it.
Okay, we loved it too.
Cool. Well, do you want to introduce yourself a little bit for people who haven't listened to that triple feature episode?
Yeah, sure.
A little introduction on you.
Absolutely. My name is Purnell Linghorn III. I am a writer, content creator, artist all around, and I recently just moved back from LA, back home to Virginia. Been readjusting there. Yeah, that's pretty much it about me. I love all things Disney. I love all things nerdy. I love my anime. I love DC as well, and anything that's nerdy, I kind of find my place.
Nice,
I find my
yeah.
place within.
Sounds about right for us too, you know. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't like the whole one part of a fandom kind of thing, you can usually find your niche in another kind of thing,
mm-hmm. or at least appreciate it, you know.
Right, with the internet now, I think it makes it a lot easier to kind of find what you like about it and find those people too, which is mm-hmm. awesome.
Absolutely.
Well, you reached out to us with this episode idea, you said, after you listened to our High School Musical one, which is also by the Lord and Savior himself, Kenny Ortega. So do you want to talk a little bit about maybe your history with these movies and why you wanted to do this episode?
Oh, yeah. I completely reached out because I had listened to the High School Musical one, and that's what made me reach out, because I was like, oh, Kenny Ortega train, let's go. Let's go. I was like, if anyone wants to talk about Descendants, it's going to be me. I was so hyped for this series when it was first announced years and years ago, because it was like, wow, this is exactly, it's like, why wouldn't this work? You know, mm-hmm. why not have these iconic characters have children and have that kind of flourish? And especially with the villains, like having it be a focus on the villains was so intriguing. And I remember everyone had their fan castings and everyone was mm-hmm. so excited that Descendants was coming out. And I had watched the first movie kind of perfectly. It was leaked online right before it came out, and I watched it at Disney World with my family.
That's perfect. Yeah,
I was on vacation watching Descendants, and I was like, this just feels right. I was like, being in Disney World. And then when the sequels came out, I saw those immediately. I saw those ASAP, when they premiered on TV. I was tuning in because I was hooked. And, but I never watched the, they made a TV show as well.
Yeah, the 2-minute, 3-minute long episodes.
Little bumper type
shows. I feel
like
Disney does that a lot with their popular properties, makes these really small snippets of episodes.
But it was animated and it was so weird.
Yeah, they're actually doing another one. Spoilers, everyone. But The Royal Wedding, it's going to be animated and coming out it's supposed to be this summer.
It's Descendants?
Yeah, but it's an animated special.
I have not even heard of this. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't either until on Letterboxd I saw them listed as the cast for it. And another Descendants.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed the whole growth that came from the fandom itself. Even before the movie came out.
Yeah, it was big before it even came out. Yeah, which was wild. I think people were stoked for this even before the first one came out. And then it kind of just spiraled and to what it is now, which is there's books out, and I think they could really still kind of jump off of this idea, even if they have to cast new people and another to make another spin-off mm-hmm. kind of thing. I think people just love this this concept.
Yeah, I think like a spin-off TV show would be good. Like maybe in the aisle.
Yeah.
Was this your guys' first time watching?
So my sisters love these movies. I saw the first one, not when it first premiered, but around like a year later, maybe 2016. And then I saw the second one pretty much when it premiered on Disney. And then the third one I actually never watched until last night. I just didn't really, I mean, like, I wasn't the biggest fan of the movies, so I wasn't like rushing to like, oh, I gotta see the third one. I always kind of plan to, but this was obviously the perfect time now to watch the third one. And they're all on Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. So I rewatched the other two, and then I watched the third one for the first time yesterday.
Yeah, I had surprisingly actually never seen these.
That is surprising. Which is
so crazy to me because I am all about like Disney Channel original movies. But I think I had stopped kind of watching like new Disney Channel content probably around this time. Apart from like Andy Mac, I was pretty much only watching older Disney Channel stuff or like rewatching. So I just never had watched these, but I knew a lot of the music somehow. I don't think I ever purposefully listened to the soundtrack or anything, but I was familiar with the music or some of the bigger songs, I guess, and familiar with the characters and the people who are in it and stuff.
Yeah. During this time when it like came out, there was a huge surge of when the first movie came out, there was like all these franchises all across the kids' entertainment were like, what if this character had kids? What if this character had kids? Because you had Monster High, which were all like the classic. You got Frankenstein, the werewolf, you know, Loch Ness Monster, like all. It's like, what if they all had kids? And then you had Ever After High, which was kind of like Descendants. And it was all like, oh, what if like Cinderella and Snow White and everyone had kids? And then everything was like, what if this group of people had
this famous person had kids, basically, so we can make this the same movie but with their kids. Yeah,
pretty much.
Which I think that's what this movie kind of, not to give too much away, but that's what I do like about them, is that they don't try to repeat the same stories as their parents' stories. It's like a very separate thing that's like basically their own story, so the stories themselves don't feel like contrived or overdone. Like, they're very much their own thing, which I think was smart rather than... And I think it's because it's all of them together.
Yeah, that helps.
So I do appreciate that about them. That it's not just, like, the rehashed Cinderella or rehashed Maleficent stories. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So anything else before we kind of move into talking about the movies themselves?
Ooh, no, I'm ready.
So let's go into a quick ad break then. And then when we come back, we will start by talking about the first Descendants movie. So, Descendants 1 from 2015. This is interesting that they were 2 years apart, because there were 2015, 2017, and 2019, where usually I feel like Disney's like, they like to do their trilogies year for their original movies. Like, that's how they did it with High School Musical.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's interesting to see all the characters age over the three movies, because you have 2 years in between.
Because I was looking back at the first movie today, actually. I was just, like, looking at clips, and I was like, wow, they look like babies in the first
one. They're so young in this one.
All their little chubby cheeks.
So, let's do a quick synopsis here. Pernell, do you want to read this one?
Absolutely. In a present-day idyllic kingdom, the benevolent teenage son of Belle and the Beast is poised to take the throne. His first proclamation, offer a chance at redemption to the troublemaking offspring of Cruella, Maleficent, the Evil Queen, and Jafar, who have been imprisoned on a forbidden island with all the other villains, sidekicks, evil stepmothers, and stepsisters. These villainous descendants, Carlos, Mal, Evie, and Jay, are allowed into the kingdom to attend prep school alongside the offspring of iconic Disney heroes, including Fairy Godmother, Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella, and Mulan. However, the evil teens face a dilemma. Should they follow in their nefarious parents' footsteps and help the villains regain power, or embrace their innate goodness and save the kingdom?
Let me say, even if you want to talk about like how good the story is when you actually watch the movie, this is a fire pitch.
Yes.
This is so good. How do you read this and be like, nah, I'm good?
It's like, oh, that won't make money.
Who can? This is a brilliant. It's brilliant.
It is
the main concept.
Mm-hmm. Where do we start? From the very beginning, or like?
I don't know. Well, so you've got. I think you got to start from rotten to the core, because that's like, the open. That kind of introduces you into the world.
It really does. But we don't even start there. We start, well, first off,
can with I, the iPad opening.
Is the funniest thing. And I'm so mad Disney didn't capitalize on making those iPad cases.
They didn't. Oh, you're correct.
Like, they could have totally, because that was the dopest thing. Like, oh, storybook. It's like, psych, why?
It's iPad. An iPad.
And then the kingdom dynamic that you see when the iPad opens, you're like, how does this work?
Yeah.
You see, like, you see Cinderella's castle, and then behind it says the Great Wall.
Right, yeah.
And I'm like, huh?
I think what the first thing that I noticed when watching this movie, too, is, like, so the setup is that you've got Prince Ben in this, mm-hmm. and he's going to become the king. My first question is, why is he becoming the king? His dad looks fine, looks pretty young. He doesn't have any gray hair. He looks like he's living life. So is it just like, did he just get tired of being king? And he's like, you know, I'll just give this to my 17-year-old son. He can lead the kingdom.
Yeah, I was like, wait a second. I also don't understand why the dad, like, is the only person that wears glasses in the series. Like, it's his whole brand that he has, like, a pair of glasses.
And sometimes he'll take them off.
Yeah, I'll take him off, like, in the second one when he's mad and then puts him
back
on.
That was just so funny to me because I was like, I think it would make more sense if it was a character that, like, canonically wore glasses. But, like, I don't know if they were just trying to, like, oh, it's the Beast, like, try to make him different or something.
It's like, I didn't know the Beast had bad eyesight. And this was the weirdest thing to me. I was like, why Belle and Beast? Because I always viewed, like, Cinderella as, like, the top princess. Because it's her castle. It's Cinderella's castle. And I was like, why are Beast and Belle the head honchos in this Disney realm?
Yeah, that is interesting.
It just didn't add up to me.
Maybe the Beast is the character we have, the male character we have the most information about. Mm. So like with Cinderella or Sleeping Beauty, I think the prince it's more like the Prince Charming kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so at least with the Beast, maybe they would assume that we would have more connection with him.
Yeah.
Which is funny because to me, I think out of like all of the characters that they take from their movies and try to put them in this, I think they translate the worst or whatever way they translate. They are so lame.
Yeah,
like,
they are lame.
I love Beauty and the Beast, and it's like, what are they? This isn't Beauty and the Beast.
It's
this
bad.
Isn't Belle.
Yeah, you don't see her. You're like, oh, that's Belle. But you know what's funny? It's like she was in Once Upon a Time as the Blue Fairy.
Yeah, you're right. She was.
So she's still in like this her Disney property realm herself.
Yeah.
And
I don't know where that dad came from. He looked like they plucked him off the street, like at a random barbecue, and he was like, "Yeah, you could do this."
She didn't hold a single book. She didn't read at all in the whole trilogy. I was like, Belle would have at least something on like a quick book to have, just like on her side, you know.
Also, I feel like Belle would be the one that would be advocating already for them to get off the aisle, like the kids.
Right?
Like, that seems like what her character would be from Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels very out of character for her to be like, I don't know if I want these people to come.
Right.
The Beast, you know.
It's like, what happened to
he's
y'all?
Mad. Yeah, like, in your old age, you know, you get cynical.
Yeah, but we start with them first, and then we go into Rotten to the Core. Which I thought was a smart thing. I think it was smart not jumping completely to the aisle first because I think they needed the familiarity of, oh, look at these iconic characters and this they have kids now. But, and then they do like the little slow zoom to the ghetto.
Yeah.
Cue the dubstep.
Personally, I think this is the worst opening song of the three. Uh-huh. But it is very iconic now, at least in like the fandom. And I do think, at least visually, is a good introduction to the aisle because you get to see a lot of it, even though we're not really on the aisle that much in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get to see all the characters and that they're kind of like the head honchos of the aisle, I guess.
Yeah, it's their anthem.
It is their anthem.
And they made Disney made so many remixes of it after this came out.
Which is funny because this already sounds like a remix, kind of. Like, this song, the way it's mixed sounds like a remix And I never understood why Jay has like the top vocal in the mix,
because
he's like probably out of the four, like I don't want to say like the lowest, but like they focus on him the least, I think. So it's just funny that his voice is like the prominent one, like rotten to the core.
Yeah, he had the least character viewing, and yeah. I guess Kenny, you know, really likes him some Boo Boo. I mean, and that's another thing that drove me to Descendants was the cast, because I had already known Dove Cameron, but Boo Boo Stewart, like that's Seth from Twilight. And also he's in Julie and the Phantoms, which I haven't seen yet, but still a Kenny Ortega property. And so I think he really likes him some Boo Boo, but who doesn't? But they didn't do him justice in the Descendants series.
I agree. I think even Carlos, I think, has better writing as the stories go on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really on the two female leads is like where the focus is for this one.
Yeah.
Which I think it's cool that if anything else, that they have like very strong female leads in this series. And so I think that is great for like kids to see.
Yeah. I think also it was for marketing reasons, because they really wanted to sell toys, and they're like, well, boys aren't really gonna.
Yeah, because you have the hair, you know, the boys don't have as cool hair. And so you've got the blue and the purple hair, and you're like, this will sell Halloween costumes. This will
and
sell.
Boy, did they sell.
Oh, yeah. Lots of Halloween. I saw that all the time.
You'll be surprised even today how many kids you'll see at the Disney parks wearing Descendants stuff. The amount of girls I saw dressed up as Mal and Evie when I was in California, it was crazy. And they would like line up to meet the villains. Like so many Mals were lined up to meet Maleficent, and like so many little Evies. And I'm like, wow, they really like created something where like they can have an interaction. Like, I'm playing your daughter, and it's like, you're my mom kind of thing. It's like,
that's cute.
It was cute, but I always see Descendants costumes at the Disney parks all the time.
I do think the costume design is cool for them. I think like it's definitely over the top, but it's cool because once they get to Auradon, which is obviously like the very idyllic kingdom, they definitely stand out. Overall for this one, this is like the most basic story.
Yeah, they had to lay a foundation.
Right, yeah, which makes sense. I think then when after you watch 2 and 3, when you go back, it kind of feels like small in comparison, because I think once they add the Isle in 2 and 3, I think that really opens up the world.
Definitely.
But I think this one, like, it's overall like a pretty solid story. I think probably it has a few songs I'd like. It's like, I think Did I Mention is like a classic. That song is fire. I love that song.
You do?
I do. I don't really like sports, but I like sports and movies because they could dramatize them.
Yeah.
So I like a good like sports finish in a movie.
And they're Quidditch pretty much.
It's basically Quidditch, and then they kick into the song, and it's like, man.
Did you notice Carlos's jersey in that song?
No, I didn't.
His number is 101.
Oh, really?
I was like, this is ooh. I was like,
yeah,
details.
I saw that.
That is iconic. Wow.
But talking about the wardrobe, it's funny because the Descendants series I call Disney Bound the Movie, which is for the listeners who don't know what Disney Bounding is, it's pretty much creating a Disney character with just the clothes in your own closet. And it's like using lots of color blocking and color patterns. And I feel like that's all they did, which is beautiful. But it was like Auradon kids get cotton and tulle. Isle of the Lost, they get leather.
Yeah, and color and dyed hair, and
you get leather and dye.
Which they do actually use to their advantage in the second one.
Oh yeah.
One of the best creative decisions I think in this whole series is Chad. Chad is a classic character. Like, he is so funny to me. I think that making Cinderella and is that Prince Charming or Prince Eric? No, Prince Eric.
Prince Charming.
Cinderella. Prince Charming. Okay, I always get the princes mixed up. I think making him, his name Chad, and then making him like this really like dopey character, and then making the character of, what is he, Dopey's son?
Yeah, Dopey's son. Out of all the characters to make children out.
Making him actually like the smart one, I think that was really like funny, because it is kind of a commentary on how like in those old Disney movies, the prince and princesses, they didn't really have much personality.
Yeah.
Like in that Cinderella kind of that era. And so I think that was really funny, because it's kind of like a wink at the audience, like, this is really, if these characters were in this movie like Cinderella, that's probably how they would act if you took like the same personality traits.
I think what it does, it perfectly represents the theme of you're not your parents.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, these characters are not their parents, or at least as we have seen them portrayed in the movies and whatnot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just speaks to the whole theme. Who did you enjoy the performances of, like, the main four?
I think overall, yeah, I think they are probably throughout. I think Ben is a pretty good actor, whoever plays him. I think, like, the main characters are fine. They don't always have the best dialogue to work with.
Yeah.
I think usually it's, like, the side characters that usually don't do it for me. I think, like, they're fine actors. Usually it's in the dialogue and then sometimes the direction where, like, that Beauty and the Beast trap remix, I don't know whose idea that was. Like, I don't know who came up with that, but I think they just need to maybe take a break, take five, walk around the room for a bit.
It was cringe fest.
It was major cringe.
The timeline doesn't really make sense. I mean, it's a Disney movie with all these characters, but, like, you have Mulan, her daughter, like, mentions, like, her mom being in the war, and I'm like, wait, you mean that in ancient China?
How'd you get here?
But then you got a smartphone, and then you got, like, the fairy godmother having a daughter. I was like, wait, how old is the fairy godmother?
Well, and they all, like, had kids at the same time. Like,
same time.
Because all their kids are the same age, so it's like, was every villain and every hero, like, oh, I'm gonna have kids now?
Yeah. It's definitely not canon. Like, you can't consider it canon if you're watching Mulan, like, oh, then she went on and had a daughter and lived in Auradon.
Like, I think it was in the second movie, I don't mean to jump ahead, but just that this one line, and Mulan's kid goes, like, yeah, my mom would have lost the war if she would have thought like that. I was like, you mean that war that she fought?
The war that was years and years before whenever Beauty and the Beast was supposed to take place?
Exactly. But, you know, it's a Disney movie, so what can you do?
Funny, too, because I feel like they say that Auradon is big. But especially in this one, it feels so small.
It feels
like
very small.
Like, it's only, like, this one, like, little school.
We also don't see a lot of the school. There's no, like, sweeping shots of, like, a staircase or, like, the hallways. We're always just confined.
The aisle feels small, too.
Yeah. And I think that's because the set pieces in this are probably... I don't want to always have to compare it to, like, High School Musical or something. But that's what really sets it apart in that way for me. Where, like, the set pieces in this don't feel as grand... Because I think they tried to use a lot of CGI in that place. Because there's a lot of CGI in these movies.
East High looked huge. Even now, looking at it. Like, when they're doing What Time Is It? And they're, like, in the cafeteria towards the end of the song. I'm like, this cafeteria is massive.
This is a real school, you know? This is, like, it feels real. With this, it feels, like, very...
confined.
Yeah, confined. I think the set pieces get better over the movies. But especially in this first one, it's, like... very much like it could almost be a play. Like, there's rooms and room and room.
So evil like me, when it comes to the parents specifically, how did you feel about the parents? And then also, like, evil like me with Kristen Chenoweth.
Yeah, I don't like really the parents, but I'm glad they dropped the parents in the sequels.
Yes.
Because I feel like they just don't embody the characters very well.
Mm-mm.
I think it kind of comes across as a little goofy.
Yeah, especially Maleficent, the mistress of evil herself, would not be cracking jokes. She's not a joke cracker. She is evil. Her whole being is evil.
Maleficent would not be FaceTiming, I would just say
that. And it's
that,
like,
right,
also
now.
Really hard to figure out any of her motives apart from, like, just being bad. And so it's like anytime she's like, "Oh, I want the wand." It's like why? Like, what is it that you're trying to do?
You could be bad on the aisle.
Like, I don't know. It just was kind of funny to me.
Also, Jafar was weird, because I was like, Jafar acts more like Aladdin, and, like, Jay feels more like Aladdin than he would, like, Jafar's son. Mm-hmm.
That's true. Jay definitely feels like Aladdin, which is weird. There actually is no Aladdin mention on the aisle. I feel like they almost mention everyone else, all the other villains, like, counterparts, except
I think they might have mentioned it in the first movie.
They did?
I think when Maleficent is, like, talking to the other villains, and she's like, oh, that person did this to you. I think they mentioned it, but they don't go into, like, any sort of depth with it all. You know, there's no time for it in the runtime.
That's definitely true. I think Jay definitely would, to me, read more as an Aladdin than a Jafar.
Definitely. One thing I love, though, about this trilogy is, like, they had some big names for the, you know, they had Kristen Chenoweth, and then who played the Evil Queen? Because she's a big actress as well.
Yeah, they had a few big names for that, yeah.
But one thing that they did for the casting of it, I think they took the kids that they had in mind and then they built the parents on to them because like Cruella is black.
Yeah.
But also, you know, the boy that plays Carlos, rest in peace, Cameron Boyce, we love you so much. He's half black. In the second one, the girl who plays Dizzy, she has Asian roots and they made Lady Tremaine Asian. And I was like, this is brilliant. It's like they didn't have to, but they did. And I thought that was so beautiful. And it just opened so many doors for people and like seeing themselves as like, oh, it's like, oh, Lady Tremaine can be like a badass Asian woman. Like, why not?
Yeah, I think that is cool because, like you said, it's already like obviously this isn't re like couldn't realistically be possible with like Mulan living in the same timeline as these people. So it's like they took that and like, all right, so let's just make these characters like the way we want to make them and not feel like so confined to the what they were before, which I think is cool that they felt that freedom. You got the big finale with the dragon, which is the worst CGI I've ever seen, but you know.
It's bad in all three of them. The CGI is so bad.
Which is weird because these series was they made so much money and Disney makes so much money, so I don't know why Disney like could they not give them the budget
I don't
like
know.
to make it
It
look
reminded
better?
me of the dragon from Shrek. Like, that is what I can when Maleficent like turned into the dragon or whatever, I was like, is this the dragon from Shrek right now? Like,
Especially
that's
being
how
inside
bad
of
it
the
looked.
castle, it felt very Shrek, now that you
Yeah,
mentioned it.
because and Shrek was so long ago. So I'm like, you would think that they would, I don't know, be able to do a little bit more realistic of a dragon, maybe.
Everything felt like once upon a time quality, especially like you could tell like the floor was CGI, like it felt like once upon a time effects for Descendants.
Especially in this first one. I think the first one, maybe it's even like they didn't know how big the first one was going to be when they started making it. And so they were put a little more money in.
Yeah,
But
I mean,
even
it
now, it
definitely
still
got
looks like
more
very
grand
CGI'd.
in the following ones. Like, I mean, the special effects didn't necessarily improve, but you can tell that they like tried to do bigger things after the first one.
Yeah, the first one feels very confined in like. But it is interesting that they specifically wink at a sequel, literally, in the end. So it's like they knew they were gonna make a sequel, which was interesting.
That wink was so misleading. I was like, yo, is she gonna kill him in the second movie or something?
She looked like, yeah, I was like, whoa.
I was like, yo, I was like, wait, does she have a bigger plot in mind? Like, does she
Could
actually
you
want to take
imagine how
over?
cool that would have
That
been?
would've been wild.
Oh,
They
and that's
take
what I
over
thought was gonna
Oregon.
happen. I was like, wait, does she have her own plan in mind? Like, what's gonna
Yeah.
happen?
Maybe they were thinking that they could do that, but then when they saw like how big it got and how much people like love the characters, they're like, okay, we can't make them bad because
Right.
or quote unquote bad. Before we wrap this one up, let's go around and say our favorite and least favorite song from this
Okay.
movie. So for me, my favorite is Jedi Mention, because that is a bop. And least favorite is a tie, because this one like Be Our Guest isn't like a full song, so it's between that and I think Rotten to the Core. Just I don't really like that one very much. I think mostly just the vocal performances in that one are like not very good to me. So that's what makes that one the worst for me.
What about you, Kayla?
I'm trying to remember which songs are which.
I can give a snippet of each.
Evil like me, don't
Evil
even
Like Me was a
bother.
Broadway one, which
I like
I.
that one. I think,
Yeah.
'cause that's probably the one I remember the most, like the set piece and the song that I remember the most. So I would say that's probably my favorite. Just because it's like the standout one, apart from like Rotten to the Core, which I think I only remember because it just keeps coming back. Like every single thing they
I'm
do in
rotten
this one,
to
they're
the
like,
core. Cool. It's
but
so
it's like
catchy,
every
though.
single thing that they do in this movie specifically, they're like
Yeah.
together in a group shot and then they play that motif of like, Rotten to the Core, bah! And it's like,
And then you have Jay's voice, I'm rotten to the core.
Core.
It's like,
No, it's like the
okay.
vocal fry. It's like core.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I don't know
ASMR.
which one's my least favorite, but I think Evil Like Me is my favorite of this movie.
My favorite is actually Rotten to the Core of this
That's
movie.
fine. Yeah.
Because I was like, it's the anthem, and I
Yeah.
love the play on words. Because Descendants was all about the apple motif.
Yep.
Yep. And I was like, Rotten to the Core. I was like, that's a perfect title for the song.
The movie could almost be called that, Rotten to the Core.
It literally could have been, but they wanted that Disney D.
Yeah, they needed the D.
Descendants. But yeah, I would say Rotten to the Core is my favorite of this movie, just because I love a good anthem that follows characters. I like things that follow like a group of characters, like kind of like the Avengers theme. If you hear it, you're like, oh, that belongs to these group of people. It's like you can pinpoint it. But my least favorite is definitely Be Our Guest.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was atrocious, and it does not age well. It'll just age worse and worse as time goes on.
Yeah.
But I will say, with Set It Off, I think it's a fun song. It gets me dancing, and I did something fun, and I always do this when I hear the song. The breakdown of the song, like towards the bridge, where it's just like instrumentals of the drums, I always do a mashup of Get Your Head in the Game with it, because it fits. Nice. It fits so well.
I think all three finale songs of these movies are fire. I like all of the finale songs.
I did not like the second one at all.
Oh, wait, that's my favorite one. Oh, no.
Okay, we'll get to it, though. We'll get to it, though.
Let's move into the second one, then, which for me is my favorite of the three.
I agree.
But I'll give a quick synopsis here. So the story deepens in the music-driven sequel to the global smash hit Descendants as the teenage sons and daughters of Disney's most famous villains, Mal, Evie, Carlos, and Jay, try to find their place in the idyllic Auradon. When the pressure to be royally perfect becomes too much for Mal, she returns to her rotten roots on the Isle of the Lost, where her archenemy Uma, the daughter of Ursula, has taken her spot as self-proclaimed queen of the rundown town. Uma, still resentful over not being selected by Ben to go to Auradon Prep with the other villain kids, starts her pirate gang, including Captain Hook's son Harry and Gaston's son Gil, to break the barrier between the Isle of the Lost and Auradon, and unleash all the villains imprisoned on the Isle once and for all. All these synopsises I got from the Descendants wiki, by the way, so thank you. Shout out to them.
They like the word idyllic.
Why is this one your favorite, Purnell?
Because, number one, I love anything to do with the ocean. Anything nautical is that's my shit. And I love having Uma as a character. Like, I think they did her perfectly. Mm-hmm. Especially with her wardrobe and, like, her tentacle-like braids and all that. I was like, everything about the second one just feels bigger than the first one, but in the best ways for me, because I think they really upped they upped everything. And it just, mm-hmm. It feels a lot more, like, clean, yeah, in, like, a polished kind of way. But it still had its, like, roots of the Isle versus Auradon kind of thing.
And I think, like, in the first one, it's kind of like a question in the back of your mind. Like, what about, like, because obviously they're not being subtle with the social commentary of all of these movies with, like, immigration policy, border control kind of thing. And you're kind of thinking, like, so this is kind of like a white savior thing, because, like, Ben just brings these four people, and then what about everyone else?
Exactly.
They kind of just, like, forget about them. And so I think it's a great part of this movie where they go back to the Isle and kind of address that, and, like, how they would have felt by not being picked, and, like, the kind of tension between them and then the ones that were picked, which even deepens in the third one. So I think that for me, I think this is a more, I like High School Musical so much better than this, but I think this is a more thematically consistent trilogy, because I think it follows a very clear arc
throughout the movies,
which I think is a really cool for a movie like this, where it doesn't really even end this one in, like, a very clear way.
It's no,
a
very much which I thought was way. So smart. That was so smart. Like, still having Uma, because when the second movie came out, I was like, oh, Uma's gonna join them by the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, wait, she just, like, disappears?
Yeah, into the ocean. And then the final song is them, like, singing about, like, getting kids off the Isle, but you don't know how they're gonna do it, so they're just kind of singing about, like, we've gotta be brave. You have to be
You gotta
true.
Be bold. You gotta be brave. You gotta be free.
Yeah.
You gotta be loud, making the change. See, and I say I don't like it, but I know it.
Yeah.
It gets me hype. It gets me hype, though.
Kayla, do you like this one, or how, like, would you say this one ranks with the other ones?
I don't know. They're all about the same for me. I wouldn't say I liked any of them, but I guess I disliked this one the least. I don't know. It's kind of hard. I think what's hard for me is that, like, I really, 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 really don't like China Ann McClain. So yeah, I really wanted to like, I liked all the aspects of Uma. And I think if it wasn't her playing Uma, I would have liked this one a lot more. Which is tricky because that's just like one of those things that a person who has represented things badly or been controversial recently has kind of given me a bad taste of.
Yeah, I was wondering, I'm like, did you, have you not liked her like her whole career, or is it just because of like the TikTok?
I watched Ant Farm as a kid. And I mean, I was never particularly like, I wasn't ever like a fan of hers.
A fan of hers?
Oh my gosh.
Got him.
But more recently, because of the TikTok and Instagram and all that, I'm like,
it hurts to watch.
Yeah, it's very bad.
Yeah, they're not good.
And so watching her in this, I'm like, ah, she's a good actress and a good singer and like,
yeah, she probably has one of the best voices, I would think.
She played the role well, and Uma's a fun character, and I love the little band of pirates with Harry and Gil, and I think that they're hilarious and have some good bits going for them, and I think that they're great additions to this movie and the third movie, but it's just hard for me to be like, oh, I love it, because I'm still like, ugh.
It hurts so much because China was, I feel like out of all the cast, she is the Disney veteran out of all of them, because she was the most popular because she had so much history, but she was not only like a household name, she was also like a Black household name because she was first featured in a lot of Tyler Perry movies. I pretty much had like always seen her and I was like, oh, this is perfect. She's in Descendants. I'm like, and she has a great voice. And then her TikTok came around, and I was like, dang it, it's like, we lost her. We lost her.
There
and I
don't goes know, another one.
Right? But, like, I hope it doesn't last long, but it's like she's stuck now.
She's still very young, so. It does make it a little harder, because I think she has easily the best voice of anyone here. That's one issue for me, I think. They have to auto-tune. I mean, I know, I am a fan of auto-tune. I'm not an auto-tune hater, but they have to auto-tune a lot of these songs heavily because it's obvious that like they don't have great voices. Like they have fine voices but not like musical voices, which I think musical voices you need to be like really
you good. you don't hate auto-tune like Usher?
No, I'm a fan of auto-tune when it fits, but for these I feel like even when like you have Mal singing then you have Evie singing, sometimes I can't even tell the difference between their voices. Like, they sound, like, exactly the same.
One thing about Evie, though, that girl could hit those high notes.
No, she has a good voice. I think Chillin' Like a Villain is my favorite song in the whole series.
That is a great song.
So good. I think it's so
dancing,
funny,
though.
Too.
The dancing. Carlos killed that dance.
Oh, he's a great dancer. Like,
his black shines when he dances.
They don't have him sing a lot. Because I think his dancing is where, like, he's at. And so when they give him the dance stuff, I think that's when the songs shine. And I think the songs in this are, like, out of the three, my favorite songs in the whole.
I agree.
Ways to Be Wicked is, for me, such a step up from the other one.
I agree.
And I like how it's the opening and they're being bad. And you're like, wait, but the last one ended. And they were good. So what's happening? But then it's
so I thought my theory was true when I was watching it. I was like, oh, they took over.
They took over Auradon.
It's like Rotten to the Core 2.0.
I think it's a cool theme, at least, of her. Because she made that transition in the first one very fast. Like, we're going to be good now. And so I think it is smart to have give Mal like that tension or not that conflict where it's like, okay, so how do I be good, though? Because, like, I can't just forget who I was.
Yeah, she felt like she was just putting on a performance.
With the dyed hair, which, again, calls back to, like, how the Auradon kids dress. Even Audrey has, like, that dyed hair.
Well, she wasn't even in the second one.
No, yeah, she...
She was off filming Charmed.
She ducked for the second one and then came back for the third one. Like, okay, I need my
spot. Yeah, she was with the CW for the second movie. She was off filming the Charmed spinoff. And I thought that she was removed forever.
Yeah, because they mentioned her because Chad was like trying to get her back throughout and he's hilarious.
But they still kept it in the Sleeping Beauty realm because they're like, oh, she's in the Sherwood Forest, but she's in the cottage with the three godmothers. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. It's like, yeah, of course you would hang out with them.
We should get a spinoff of that.
Yeah.
Audrey and the Fairy Godmothers.
One thing that was so funny to me about this movie and the third movie as well was this like hyperfixation on the 3D printer. Like, why was
yes.
Is it just because like 3D printers were kind of like new and bit? Like, it was just so funny to me that whole thing, like, we had all the scenes with Chad like breaking into their room to print 3D print like right. figures of himself. Yep.
And then it's a main part of the plot with making the wand.
Yeah, and then they use it for like the climax scene to like make this wand, and then it's used again in the third movie when he's like, I 3D printed this necklace for you.
I 3D printed this gift. Like it didn't need to be in there, that line.
No.
Yeah, it was like this big thing too, you know? Like it was just like so funny to me.
I wouldn't be surprised if they had shown the logo of the 3D printer. Like, it almost felt like, you know, when, like, there's an ad in a movie when they, like, they show the Honda, and, yeah. like, the logo very prominently. So that's what it felt like, where, like, I made this gift with my wink-wink 3D printer. And...
Ooh, side note. When it came to the second and third one, it's good that the adults weren't in it anymore, except for Belle and Beast and, like, Sleeping Beauty's mom. But I love how Maleficent was just a lizard, and then, like, in the third movie... Where is she?
She just disappears.
Yeah, she's just like, where did Mal put her?
Well, yeah, because in the second movie, she does the whole thing where she, like, pokes the holes in the box to, like, take her back to the aisle. And I was like, you could have just left her. Like, why do you have possession of her? Like,
right?
Why isn't she in the museum or somewhere magical with, like, a bear? I mean, I know she's a lizard, but...
Mm-hmm.
She can still live her life. Lizards can live.
I guess, but it's like, and then they just don't even mention her.
And then they just don't mention her in the third one. It's like they accidentally, like, stepped on her, like, shoot.
But yeah, that was kind of funny. Wardrobe stepped up a lot, I think, in this one. And hair stepped up the most. These have my favorite hairstyles. Like, Mal's hair, a lot of people hate the bangs, but I love the bangs.
I like how they kind of have, like, not an origin story, but, like, an explanation of why, like, dyeing hair is so big for them when they go back to the shop and like have the whole makeover thing,
which made no sense because you see Dizzy cutting off all these pieces of hair,
but then she has longer hair than she had before,
right? And she puts in curlers. I was like, there's not a single part of her hair that's curled.
Yeah, that was funny because she had the curlers in, and then the next scene it was like her hair was so straight, and like, where did the curlers come into this?
Her shop was the best set piece in my opinion.
I like that, and then I liked the ship.
Oh yeah,
I thought that was really cool. And that was an example, like, okay, this is a ship is obviously real, so they are making some practical sets here.
Because the shop was, the name was Curl Up and Die.
Oh,
and I thought that was brilliant. But there's like paint splatters everywhere, and then there's a giant portrait of Lucifer. I don't know if you saw it, Lucifer the cat.
Yeah,
from Cinderella. And I was like, oh, I love that little touch of Disney history in there.
We haven't talked any about Ben yet, so what are our thoughts on Ben?
He's all right.
Yeah, he's all right. He's there.
He just is like, I have a hard time understanding him because I think he's an interesting character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the guy who plays him does a really good job.
I agree.
But I'm like, I don't know that they utilize him as well as they could.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of just like, oh, I have to go get Mal. Oh, I love peanut butter and jelly.
Oh, that's like, the best line. Like, I love peanut butter and jelly. It's my favorite.
That's my favorite. Yeah, he's kind of a placeholder as like a love interest. But I will say the man does a great American accent because he's British.
He definitely has fun. Like you can tell that he wants to be there and he's like having a fun on the set. I think after the first one, as the movies go, he gets less and less of a role, which is disappointing because in the first and second, they build up like the Beast transformation. Like they foreshadow it very heavily. Like,
I thought he was going to transform in the second one. When Uma transforms and then Mal transforms and then he roars to the sky and
lightning cracks. He roars
and
then just does nothing.
I was like,
oh. That would have been so much cooler. Like
a trifecta fight.
I thought the same thing and then he just like roared and it was like, what?
It feels very anticlimactic and it's like, okay, I see. But I do like, I mean, obviously it's like they undo it so fast, but it's a nice twist, you know. I forgot it happened when he walks out and Uma's with him and she spelled him. I'm like, wow, I see how it is.
And wait,
I
spelled like, him how? Oh, with the...
him and like makes her him in love with her for a second.
Do you know why they did that?
No.
Little Mermaid. It's literally the plot of Little Mermaid.
Yeah, you're right. Wow.
And they, when they're dancing, when Uma spells him and they're dancing, in the background they have an instrumental of Kiss the Girl playing.
I did hear that. That was good.
And I was like, this is so smart. I love that they're taking this story and like, it's like, oh, I'll just do what my mom did. Like, just makes sense. We didn't talk about this, but how do you feel about the use of magic in this trilogy? Like, do you think they handled magic okay or well or good enough?
I think it could have been more interesting. Like, that's they could have done more with it that, like, made it actually, I don't know, interesting. I think the stuff is cute, like, her changing everybody's hair, like, because that's, like, good. A very high school girl thing, and I thought that was funny, but then it was like, oh, I'm gonna spell the security guard to, like, touch the spindle or whatever.
It's like, why don't you just spell him to be asleep?
It's like, why don't you just make him go to sleep?
Right?
Like, why is this even out where people can touch it? Why right? is there not a protector over the
needle? Yeah, no, like, glass case. Anything. Do not touch spindle,
like, it's just
spindle,
so funny
please.
To me. So stuff like that, like, when they would do kind of simple magic with those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And how was the security guard not fired? Because he was in the third one and he got snuck by again.
Right?
This guy is just like taking
like,
all right,
the L. Bob, this has happened twice.
Yeah, so it was just
come
funny.
Come on, man. You put the us in danger.
Yeah, so I would
now.
Say the magic was all right. I don't think it was as creative as it could have been.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's weird that they take away her spell book in the second one, but then in the third one, she can still do spells. So it's like, can she just do the ones that she memorized? Or can she still...
Well, that's what I was going to bring up, because I think... That's the one thing I do like about the magic, is they... For that, it was like a part of her growth, because she mentions it, I think, in the end of the second one or something, when mm-hmm. she eventually turns into a dragon. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh, I guess I don't need the spellbook anymore. Like, she can, like, do magic, like, her mom, like, without right. the book at all times. And so it's almost like she, like, leveled up in a way.
She leveled up, yeah. She doesn't need that spellbook.
Yeah, and then of course she had another costume change after she turned back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep.
But that's somehow. You know, that's all for the toys, because they made so many new toys. It's like they got to make the toys new. They got to
like
give them new outfits.
Mal, long purple hair, Mal after the dragon. It's like gotta collect them all.
I will say though, I'm glad that the dragon wasn't cutesy. I'm glad that her form of a dragon, like it looked like a dragon. They didn't like give it like. A cute like bubblegum pop aesthetic, like it still had purple in it, but it looked like you could see the scales, and she had these menacing eyes and these like
like it looks like a scary air dragon would be. Yeah,
and the wingspan was huge. I was like, is this Game of Thrones? Like it was like
yeah, just flapping around there. And like I said, I think I like the way this one ends. You have a very clear thought of what they will happen next, like you know what the next step is.
Mm-hmm.
And so this movie is all about, like, her self-acceptance as, I guess, accepting her roots, I guess would be probably the best way to put it.
Yeah. Not feeling ashamed to, like, be herself as a princess.
The next movie is more about, like, okay, so now what are you going to do for the other people on the island?
It's like, what are you going to do about Uma, who's, like, missing in action?
Right, yeah, just in the water somewhere.
And her little, they did a wink at the first one, at the end one. She was like, you didn't think this was the end of the story, did you? Mm-hmm. And she sinks into the water.
Yeah, she did it too, yep.
The little nods. All right, favorite songs and least favorite song.
Chillin' Like a Villain, easily the best for me in this one. I think that's a fire song. I like a lot of the songs in this one, though. Like, this was, it's tough. If that wasn't such a good song, it would be really hard to pick. My least favorite is It's Going Down. Because it just sounds like they listened to Hamilton and were like, oh, right, we know what's popular with the kids today.
Right.
So that one is probably, I like the idea of it with like the two guys, they're like fighting back and forth. Again, I don't think there's like a bad song technically in this one. I think they're all pretty good. But that's probably my least favorite just because it's like, it feels a little out of place. Kayla, what about you? Favorite And
I think my favorite is probably, I mean, I like Chillin' Like a Villain, of course, because it's fire. But I think I like What's My Name. I
say think it louder.
A fun one. What's my name?
I like how they keep doing it too. Like she's like, "What's my name?" in the third one. Like, okay, I guess it's just her.
What's my name?
Yeah, like I think I like it mostly because I think that set piece is really interesting, and the characters and the choreography is kind of a little more interesting than some of the other ones, or more unique. But I do really like Chillin' Like a Villain too.
My favorite has to be What's My Name. Because, you know, it becomes her anthem. I love me an anthem. Yeah. But it just, it goes hard. And Hook's son is too fine for his own good. Too fine with his overly applied, like, eyeliner. Mascara.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, this is great. And his accent is so attractive.
He's having so much fun.
Yeah, he's having fun. And then
yeah,
Gil
you
was
can
just
tell
a goofball.
That he was having a good time. Like, a lot of the people that played the kind of pirate crew and stuff, you can tell that they were just vibing.
Did you know him and Thomas Doherty, the guy who played Hook's son, and Duff Cameron were dating? I think they still are together.
Oh, really?
I think they're still together. For some reason.
They did a whole thing. I was watching behind the scenes, and they said, like, when Hook's son first sees Mal again, they said that they gave their own characters backstory and how, like, Mal and, like, Hook's son had apparently dated. And so there was, like, that tension, especially with Uma in the mix, like,
interesting.
You know, him joining her kind of thing.
Yeah.
But he was having the best.
Let me tell you, Mal and Evie were definitely dating too. That's all I'm saying.
People ship them like crazy.
It's the easiest ship in the easiest, most consistent ship, especially in this one with the flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And like
space
like,
between
yeah.
makes me cry.
Space between, you know, it's fire. I think anyway, yeah.
Least favorite would have to be You and Me, just because I didn't like the way it sounded. I like the message of it, but I don't like the instrumental. It felt like, after such a climactic ending, it felt like a very, like, slow, let's hold hands, like, la, la, la.
I like the set, though, with the water. I think
that was yeah.
How they, like, dance in the water and they play that up. That's fun.
I'm like, what were the safety measures for that? Because if you look, they're all wearing the same shoes.
Yeah, hopefully they don't slip. They're doing like splits in there and backflips. They're like, oh, geez.
But the water was a great ad. Fun fact, so they were Descendants books, obviously. But there was supposed to be a kiss between Gil and Hook's son, Harry. I don't know if you heard about that. They like, as What's My Name is happening, like they like have a kiss and then... You know, it's not like anything, I don't think, romantic. It's kind of almost like a comrade kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Kenny wanted it. And, of course, they gave him what they did.
Kenny's
Ryan.
Always fighting for us.
Yeah, he is fighting. He's doing his best. But, we didn't get that. Because I shipped them, too. But also, another big ship is Carlos and Jay.
In the first two, yes.
In the first two, I was team Carlos and Jay. And then I was like, I don't know, I kind of like Carlos and Jane, what they had going on. I think it's cute. And then Jay and Gil were so much better than
yes.
Carlos and Jay ever were, like, chemistry-wise. And I was like, oh, I'm totally team Jay
and they
Gil
went
now.
Backpacking at the end of the third one. They're like, oh, we should go travel
yeah,
together.
Yeah, I was it's like, so okay, this I think... is very much a better ship. Yeah.
Here's my, I think Kenny knew this.
Yeah.
I think this is not even subtext anymore. This is very, because in the second one, he shows no interest in any of the girls. Like, they make that a point. And so he's not into that. And then in the third one, which we'll go into, it's like, so obvious. It's not even like they're trying to hide it. So I think that's his way of like getting it in there without like saying it. But if you
Carlos
watch it,
and
you
Jay
know.
Had so much physical contact in the first two though. They were
the
always like
two,
on
yeah,
each
yeah.
other. And then in the second one, in the beginning when Carlos is like, hey Jay, have you ever wanted to like tell someone something and like you wanted to ask someone out? And I was like, wait. I was like, wait. I was like, is this happening in the beginning of the movie? And then, nope, he wanted Jane.
This was really, like, if they were going to do, like, the first Disney Channel original movie gay relationship, obviously there's so many other opportunities. But this movie,
it wrote itself.
Are so, like, queer-coded throughout the entire trilogy. I think it was a missed opportunity. But
definitely.
Going into the third one here, the big finale Kayla, do you want to read this one here?
In Descendants 3, Mal, Jay, Evie, and Carlos return to the Isle of the Lost to recruit a new batch of villainous offspring to join them at Aradon Prep. When a barrier breach jeopardizes the safety of Aradon during their departure off of the Isle, Mal resolves to permanently close the barrier, fearing that Nemesis's.
Yeah.
Is that right? Nemesis's?
I believe so. Nemesis's.
Okay. It just felt very weird when I was saying it.
Nemesai.
Mal resolves to permanently close the barrier, fearing that Nemesis's Uma and Hades will wreak vengeance on the kingdom. Despite her decision, an unfathomable dark force threatens the people of Aradon, and it's up to Mal and the crew to save everyone in their most epic battle yet.
Da-da-da. This one is pretty. The stakes are high in this one.
They are very high because you have so much happening at once. You have Uma as a threat, you have Hades as a threat, and you have Audrey as a threat.
Yeah, you got lots of threats, lots of things happening. Good to be bad opens this one up with a bang. I love that. That song is so good.
Yeah.
I think it's probably my favorite. I think they, like, for me, the opening songs get better as the movies go on.
Yeah, they get more hyped and they get more, like, they seem to know themselves more and more.
Yeah, like, they feel a lot more comfortable, I think, as the movies go on in their characters. And so it feels a lot less forced. Because some of the music here, I think sometimes even the styles feel forced a bit. Because it's like, oh, trap is popular now.
Right.
So gotta get that trap beat. But I think as the movies go on, the characters feel more comfortable in their... the actors feel more comfortable in their characters, and just overall it flows better. So I love the opening of this one.
And another big costume change for everybody.
Yeah, they're all different clothes, baby.
But it's still leather. I call this one their Power Rangers outfits. They all look like Power Rangers one. Like, especially when they're all together and they all have like this almost like the same style, but just in different colors. I'm like, y'all just look like Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Like these motorbike, like motocross outfits.
They do look like Power Rangers, and they have all their colors, you know, they got it.
This one starts with Good to Be Bad, and like they're doing the whole thing of introducing more kids.
Smee's kids, when Smee came in, I was like, Smee!
Right,
that's him!
You can instantly spot Smee.
His kids were so cute too.
His little twins.
And then I thought they were going to split up the twins, but they're like, we're not splitting up the twins.
I was like, oh, yeah. They were so adorable. And, you know, they take them under their wing, and The weird thing, though, is, like, Descendants is not... I don't know if the show is canon, because it doesn't really make sense if you ever saw anything of the show, because they had introduced so many more characters in the animated show. Alice had a daughter. Hook has a daughter.
Weird.
You see Genie's daughter. One... Okay, so they did lots of spinoff songs. I don't know if you found that in your research, but they did a cover of Genie in a Bottle. Where Mal sung it, and they sold another doll because of that music video of like Genie Mal. It's all about toys. Toys are where it's at when it comes to kids entertainment. And then they did Uma and Mal did, what's the Kelly? Oh, they did Stronger by Kelly Clarkson.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, Uma and Mal did a duet of Stronger, and it was all underwater.
Kelly Clarkson is canon in Descendants.
Yep.
Kelly Clarkson exists in the Descendants.
Kelly and Christina. But yeah, they, you know, they take these kids under their wing, and they kind of show them the ropes, kind of what they deal with. But then you see Audrey come back, you're like, oh, she is pissed. And I'd be pissed too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I thought it was already weird in the second one when they're like getting engaged to be engaged to be engaged. Joe is like, well, isn't she like, they're like 16 right now? This is a lot. And then he proposes to her in front of like the entire school. I'm like, dang, he better be pretty positive that she's going to say yes if he's going through all this.
But he proposes with Did I Mention lyrics.
Yeah,
so
that
cute.
Was a great reprise because it's not even the second one. So it's like a callback to the first.
Man. Yes, I thought that was beautiful. I was like, what a proposal.
King Ben, even if, you know, this character, maybe they didn't give enough. I think he's a true king in the every sense of the word.
Why didn't they keep that man's facial hair?
The facial hair was good. I thought it was fire.
They should have kept it. It was like in his fangs. They should have kept all that. I loved it so much.
Yeah.
When he like transformed.
He wasn't the beast long enough. Because the Beast had, like, I wish they used that as, like, a big climactic moment where he helped, like, in the final battle. Because I think the climax in this movie is really underwhelming in my
opinion. It is.
Just shoots the fire and, like, all right, we're done. Yeah, I think they could have done a lot cooler of a thing if, like, he came in and helped as the Beast. And so, like, even, like, Carlos, Evie, and Jay aren't even there in the climax. It's just
Mal. Right, they're all stone.
So I think that could have been handled better.
They could have at least had a cool set piece for the finale, but they didn't.
Yeah, it felt like very rushed to me.
I did like the whole Dr. Facilier set piece, though.
Yeah, that was cool. And it was like they built that all for that one scene.
Yeah, and if you look at, like, the giant, like, monster head, that's, like, the monsters that he talks to in Princess and the Frog. Mm-hmm. Like, all the demons, and eventually one he, like, gets sucked into at the end of the movie. I love the little Disney nods. There are actually more Disney nods. If you look at the background of the Isle of the Lost, like, there's, like, a Hades, like, Greek, like, Euro spot or something. There's, like, all these little, like, Easter eggs that I really appreciate, and I thought that was cool.
That is cool. I bet they had fun with that. Like, the set designers and people, like, throwing in those little Easter eggs for people to find.
So, yeah, Audrey goes off the deep end, and then we get...
She does.
Queen of
Mean.
She's
so annoying.
Queen of
Mean.
She's
annoying.
Queen of Mean is not a good song.
Is that the rap song?
Yeah, I do not like
that. That's my least favorite song. It's so bad.
That's my favorite one, which is so funny.
No, I don't like that one.
I just, like, hated all the stuff with Audrey, so I think that's why I hated that song.
The lip syncing is just so bad, too. Like, that's what the issue is. It ruins the song watching her for me.
I think what I like more about Queen of Mean is what it means for the whole story. Mm. Because you see Sleeping Beauty's daughter become the evil one and Maleficent's daughter becomes the hero. And I like how the whole movie ends with that clash of, like, you know, it's not Ursula's daughter really versus against.
Yeah, that's true.
I like how they're connected still. It's like, of course she would hate her. It's like, literally, the woman who almost killed your whole family has a kid, and that kid goes with the love of your life.
Yeah, I think it works. And I just think that, for me, it's just the song in general, like, the sound of it and the way it's presented doesn't work. But
mm-hmm.
I think, like, I mean, every good, like, villain, or when you're trying to turn them someone, like, good that into their villain, you need, like, a good song to kind of get you through that all. And I think that part of it works. I just think the song itself, like, I just didn't like the song.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think, like, having her as the main villain is the right choice, because Hades, like, spells it out at the end very obviously, where it's like, you're trying to keep the villains on an island, but the one that you think is, like, the good one is actually where the evil is coming from, quote
exactly
unquote, which is the whole theme of the movie, really.
Definitely. I will say Audrey, to me, had the best outfit in this movie. When not when she transforms, but her first outfit, because it's very Sleeping Beauty-esque.
I like her hair too.
Oh yeah, she has, like, the blue and the pink in her hair.
Yeah,
make it blue, make it pink. And then she gets, like, this little feather motif when she transforms.
Yes.
I like, her hair looks better when she transforms, but the outfit was kind of confusing.
Yeah. It was a weird transformation, like, how she had the white hair, and then all of a sudden it was pink, which I guess then is the theme of, like, the quote-unquote bad people have dyed hair. So now she's bad and needs the dyed hair.
She has to have her hair dyed rich. But yeah, did you see, so that whole scene of Queen of Mean had lots of Easter eggs as well. Like, the freaking Black Cauldron is there.
Really? No, I didn't see that.
I was like, the Black Cauldron is here? So that's canon in this world? But I love the fact that she even takes Maleficent's staff. I'm like, that is so, what it does for her character, I think, is so brilliant. Because, like I said, you have the giant clash of Sleeping Beauty versus Maleficent happening again. But, like, she takes what was used against her family.
Yeah.
And, like, claims it as her own. Why did they turn Mal into an old lady for, like, 2 minutes?
For 2 minutes.
That was the dumbest bit I've ever seen.
It was so dumb.
I thought it was
good. She's
gonna...
like, am I ugly?
I thought it was a cool idea, like, if they kept it the whole movie. But then they just reversed it, like,
yeah,
5 minutes later.
Yeah, and then she, like, was so old on the motorcycle.
Yeah, it was like,
she couldn't
oh,
walk.
Like...
She couldn't walk, but she can ride a motorcycle.
Right? It's like, and then they reach the aisle and they're like, oh yeah, no magic's here. Okay, so why did you do all that?
Yeah,
why
but
did
then you she have gets Dove off, Cameron sitting in a makeup chair? Then she gets off and then she is not old anymore. So just very confusing to me.
It was a waste of makeup person's time.
Yeah, that makeup person was like, I did all of this design, and now I can't even use it. I do like the team up, though, like how they have to team up with Uma, Hook, and Gil, and their kind of character dynamic in that one, Night Falls. That song is good. I like that
song.
Yes,
that song goes hard. The song is tough. Oh, one thing I didn't talk about Harry, Hook's son. If you notice in the second one, he just carries the hook around.
Yeah, he doesn't have, like, he just carries it. Yeah, because they take it off. And I was like, that seems weird, like, they're taking off his hand, but then he has, a hand under it. So he's
but
just,
is
his
it
hand eaten by a crocodile, too, or?
No, because he has two hands.
No, I think it's his dad. So I think that means his dad is dead.
Oh, man.
And so, because if you remember, like, I think Evie in the second movie, like, knocks it out of his hand, and he, like, goes after it. And I was like, wait, is that the last thing he has of his dad?
Aww.
And he just carries it around. I was like, that's so sad.
Interesting.
I was like, because he has both hands, but he just holds it. I'm like, you don't have to hold this hook, but it had to have been his father's.
That would be great. I bet, I mean, if they wrote a backstory for their relationship, I'm sure they would have wrote a backstory for that, like, for fun.
Yeah.
If that's, like, when you have, like, a character that's in the movie but also isn't like a prominent part of like the story, he's just there, like I think you kind of have to do that for yourself to give your character some identity in the story for yourself.
Yeah, because we don't see Hook at all. We do see Ursula's tentacle though.
Yeah,
who's played by Whoopi Goldberg.
Who is she played by?
Whoopi.
Really?
That was Whoopi Goldberg.
Got her for the one line, like, do the dishes.
Right. But yeah, Nightfalls is so good. And I love One Kiss.
Yeah, that's fun.
It's a fun song.
I think the execution of after the kiss is weird. Like how he tries to stay asleep, but he's not. And then they're like just smiling. I'm like, this is a weird execution. But the song is fun. I like the song.
Like, and I love how Mal and Uma are just like sitting by the door. Like they're like rolling their eyes. They're like looking at their wrists. They're like, yeah. Like, all right. And like, we'll give you your backup vocals, but we gotta go. Like...
What's you the, can have oh, your moment. The do what you gotta do when they have the girl do the backup vocals, I thought was fun too.
Oh yeah, Facilier's daughter. I didn't, that's my least favorite song though.
I didn't like the song, but I just liked the idea, I guess, of still using like the girl that was there so she just wasn't standing around.
Yeah, did you guys like Cheyenne Jackson in this?
I don't know. I thought it was gonna like be a bigger part of the movie, I think, going in.
I agree.
And so when it was only really like the couple scenes, I was like, I feel like they could have used this aspect of the story better.
He seemed like a placeholder for another villain. Also, it was weird when he was cast, because I'm thinking of Cheyenne Jackson and Kristen Chenoweth together. I'm like, they had a baby. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, thinking of them two together, I'm like, both queens in their own right. having a baby.
And also, every time that she says, like, it's her dad is like so badly. I think it's really just the delivery.
They
of the
try
line.
To make it so dramatic. Like she's like, my father. And then everyone's like, oh. And like, then they'd always cut to Evie being like, are you sure you're going to tell them? Like, it just is so dramatic for no reason.
It is dramatic. One thing about her having Hades as a dad, though, I don't know if you noticed when they leave the aisle. Because they go back and then they leave, her hair turns blue a little bit.
Like, it does.
She has like blue streaks now, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
It's almost all blue by the end, I feel like, which is a cool touch. You like, it's like changing over the movie.
Get it? A cool touch? but they gave a little costume change.
I think after the climax, the ending of this movie is great because it makes you think that it's just going to end with them all still, like, on the aisle and, like, Uma's going to, like, do it, like, head ups. But I just love I think this is the best movie with the, like, the subtext, I think, is the best in this one. Where
Definitely.
You have Mal, who, like, is in this role of leadership now and is kind of forgetting, like, under the pressure of all that and is just like, okay, we'll close the barrier. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what? This is so out of character for her. because this she should be. And even Evie's like, oh, I'm so glad he'll be there fighting for us. And I love that. And then I love the ending when it's like, I can't be just queen of Auradon. I have to be queen of the Isle too. Mm-hmm. And they open the barrier.
Also, I like the fact that they didn't make it seem like all the villain kids hated the Isle, because like Facilia's daughter says, she was like, I want to go back home. Like, this was fun and all. She was like, I don't like it here. And then Uma stays on the Isle, and like, I'm glad it wasn't just like, oh yeah, well, I'll just come to Auradon. You know, it's like, yeah, that's their like home.
It's like just the borders. It's like just one place now, mm-hmm. which the social commentary is so like obviously placed, but I think that's a really powerful, like, final song when they're just all dancing on that bridge.
Yeah. With,
like,
the social commentary is obvious, but I still feel like it goes over people's heads.
Yeah, I think for, like, if you're just watching it for enjoyment, or maybe if you just don't think about that stuff when you're watching movies, mm-hmm. it's probably not, you're not going to catch it. But if you're looking for it, it's not like you have to look very hard.
That honestly makes me so mad, because I'll be talking about movies to people, and it's like, they don't understand the subtext of it all. It's like the thing where so many like racist people will love like the X-Men franchise or something like that. I'm like, you missed the whole point of the story. It's like, how can you be such a fan of all these heroes like overcoming like fascism and all this stuff, but mm-hmm. your whole life doesn't really reflect it?
Yeah,
sometimes things just go over people's heads, but they presented it well, especially for kids in this sense.
Any thoughts on that, Kayla? Like, just the overall social commentary?
Yeah, I had a hard time with the first movie without the following movies at first, because it felt very, oh, we're going to get these kids out of the ghetto and put them in a private school on scholarship, and we can make them good even though they're bad kids.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't think I like this. I don't like what they're trying to say or present, I guess. I think it rounded out a little more in the other two when they did the plot line with Uma and kind of, you know, bringing the other kids and eventually breaking down the whole barrier, I think was what obviously needed to happen in the end. I think if that didn't happen, I would have been like, why are we here? Like, what was the point of all of this then?
Like, they need the barrier down.
But I think it took too long to get there. Like, I don't think those themes were established well enough until the very end of the third movie. So it's like, if you're only watching the first movie or you're only watching the second movie, then you're really not getting that sort of redemption arc or seeing the value in the people that are at the Isle, apart from like, oh, they can be good too.
No, yeah.
Even though it's a bad place. Well,
I agree with that. I think what I like about it is it's like the only trilogy I've seen of like a Disney trilogy, like this kind of type of movie, where you really have to watch all of them. And it's like, they obviously had a very clear arc set. Which I think with, like, in now the age of Star Wars, where it's, like, they have nothing set, and everything seems so disjointed, it just is very refreshing for me to see, like, it's this kids' movie that just is made to make, like we said, these toys and money, but also they had, like, this very clear social commentary arc kind of set from the beginning. And I think, like, it's a very thematically coherent, like I said at the beginning of the episode, if you think about the first one, second, and third, which I really appreciate. But I can see, like you said, some parents will only be watching the first one and maybe they don't catch the second or the third, so it's not like something you would maybe think you need to see all three for. But I think it's cool that they tried it.
And they made so much money off of these. like I said, with costumes alone, like, because when the third one came out, so many girls, like I said, I would always see them in the Disney parks. So many girls ended up having Audrey's, like, villain outfit.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's so many costumes being sold. And I think it was, like, costumes and toys and the books and the accessories. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think they had a plan from the get-go. They're like, these are going to the faces of our newest, like, toy lines. And
they made so much money.
So much money. And they're still making money. And now I'm finding out that they're making another show.
Yeah, a little spinoff. Yeah, I think, this is definitely a landmark of 2010 Disney.
Yeah, definitely.
At this point, I think this is like one of the big, because I mean, 2015 to 2019, so it was almost half of the decade that they were working on this.
I call the Descendants movies the best Disney Channel movies since High School Musical. Because I nothing else has come out that has been like appealing to me as an adult, and that hasn't made me like totally cringe, and I haven't really kept up too much with their movies, because they'll just put out some random stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think Descendants holds up, and least and favorite song, what do you think?
Favorite is Good to Be Bad, and least favorite is Queen of Mean.
Okay. What about you, Kayla?
Yeah, my least favorite is the Queen of Mean one, because that's Audrey's song, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one I don't like. I liked the final song, Break This Down, I think. And then I liked the opening song as well, Good to Be Bad. I think those were my two favorites.
I like I said, I love Queen of Mean, but I really enjoy Night Falls. But then I also love One Kiss.
Mm.
It's something about One Kiss. It sounds like, it sounds 60s.
Yeah, they try a lot of styles in these movies, mm-hmm. I will say.
But
my least favorite
is Do What You Gotta Do. I hate that song. I'm like, there's no need for a song in this scene. They don't need to sing. Nothing happened after.
It's even funny because she's talking to her dad, and then he's like, you hear the music, and she rolls her eyes, and it's almost like how we feel. Like, do we really need a song right now in this scene?
Facts.
Like, does Hades need to go into a song?
Right. But nothing happens in the song. Like, there's no transformation. There's no... You already know they don't like each other.
I like how he even, like, points out, like, about the daddy issues, like, how over, like, done that is.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking that. I was like, are we really going to give her daddy issues in the third movie? Is that what we're doing?
Oh, also, you see how Disney saved money with not making a Cerberus?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, they were just saving money. Because that's what I was looking forward to. I was like, oh, we get to see Hades. I was like, what does this three-headed dog look like? And it was like, oh, he's just using a recording.
But then they just use a little record player.
A little record player. I was like, oh, they just saving money.
So overall in the trilogy, I feel like I already kind of gave my overall thoughts. I like how thematically coherent it is. I think it's not as good as High School Musical, but also I don't have the nostalgia for this, obviously. So I have a hard time, like, saying. And I think it is... as a whole, I think it's a really good movie for kids to have, because I think there are a lot of good messages in it. I think that having those female leads and like how many like costumes they get out of it, just seeing, having like little like girls being able to see that on the screen, I think is really important.
Yeah,
because like I said, I know my sisters really like this movie, and I think like even in comparison to High School Musical, I think there's a lot better representation in that area.
Yeah.
And so I really like that. I think my ranking would be 2, 3, 1. 3 and 1 are very similar to me for but different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But 2 is definitely my favorite. And then overall favorite song would have to be Chillin' Like a Villain. And least favorite, I think I'm going to have to change my answer of the first one. My least favorite in the first one will be the Be Our Guest. And that's my overall least favorite, just because it feels so unnecessary.
It really does.
And out of place. It's just like, why is... It's the low point of the trilogy for me.
Mm-hmm. What about you, yeah. Kayla? Well, I concur with pretty much everything you said, so I kind of agree. But Kayla, how do you feel about overall?
Overall, I don't love this trilogy. Mm-hmm. I probably will not, like, revisit it for any reason. But that's just like a personal preference. Like, I understand why these movies did so well and why kids probably like them. I'm still gonna, like, you know, watch High School Musical over and over again instead, though. But that's just me. I think probably my ranking would be 2 at the top, and then maybe 3 and then 1.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I liked the characters better in it, like how they were presented better in the third one than in the first one. Yeah. So songs, I don't know. I don't really have a favorite song or a least favorite song, except I hate Audrey's song. So that's probably my least favorite of the whole trilogy.
Rip Audrey.
Rip Audrey. I love this, and I think it's because I do have the nostalgia with it, because I, like, right when it was announced, it was almost, like, too good to be true. I was like, this is such a smart idea, for a trilogy.
It is a really smart idea.
It was very smart. And my order goes 2-3-1 as well, because
wow, you know,
it's just it's just how I feel. Favorite song.
The official ranking of the trilogy has now been made.
Right, Descendants 2, Descendants 3, and Descendants 1. Favorite song overall. Ooh, it's either What's My Name or Night Falls.
Those are both good.
Those are both good. I think it's a tie, but I think my least favorite is, you know, the Be Our Guest. That was...
Yeah, because I don't like Queen of Mean either, but at least that one, like, does something.
Yeah, there's a like, you go from one point to another point in the story.
There's a purpose. It's very, like, it's a classic musical song. Mm-hmm. But Be Our Guest is, like, so cringe.
It didn't have to be there at all.
Cringe moment of the trilogy.
Oh, side note, we do see Aladdin. We see him and Jasmine in the second one when Mal goes, and, like, Evie's watching her on TV, and Mal has visited Aladdin and Jasmine. That randomly popped into my head.
When she spills on the dress.
Yeah.
Yes.
She goes to
Aladdin
visit.
Mystery solved.
Right.
Cool. Well, thanks for being on this one. This was fun. I love talking about these kind of movies because, like, I can always take the negative or the positive sides because there's obviously, like, a lot of the negative stuff you could say, but it's fun to be positive about stuff like this.
Yeah, it's a Disney Channel original movie. It's a DCOM.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's just fun, you know.
Something sweet for the kids. Just a little something sweet for the kids.
Do you want to plug anything, Pernell? Any social media? Anything?
I can. I'm really not active on Instagram, but I'll plug it anyways because I might return. Who knows? But my Instagram is at Pernell Langhorn, and then my Twitter is at Pernell, but it's P-E-R-N, the number 3-L-L. And those are my plugs.
Cool. We'll put those in the description.
Thank you both for having me, and it feels great to come back, and I miss chatting with you both. But thank you for diving into my Descendants love with me. Because I saw you guys on this Kenny Ortega train, and I love the High School Musical franchise as well. And I was like,
I will always be a Kenny Ortega stan.
Yes. I still need to see Julie and the Phantoms. Is it worth watching?
I haven't seen that one.
I've seen parts of it. I think you would probably like it. Mm-hmm. I've seen, like, clips. Like, I haven't seen any of the actual whatever.
Because people always rave about it. I'm like, is it that good?
It looks decent from what I've seen. I almost watched it the other day, and then I was like, funny. Nah.
Mm-hmm. Now we just need to talk about Newsies next. My life will be complete.
I still need to see that.
Oh my gosh, Newsies is so
good. Oh, you would love it.
I would.
You would love Christian Bale, man.
Who was also in Pocahontas. But yes, thank you so much for having me.
If you guys out there have thoughts on this trilogy, just email us at secondhandfilmcritics@gmail.com. And we would love to hear your thoughts. Maybe we'll read your comments in an upcoming episode. You can find us on all social medias. Just search Secondhand Film Critics on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, and we'll be there. And you could also find us on all your favorite podcasting services, where we release an episode every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Next Tuesday, we will be doing an episode, the third episode in our Summer of Star Wars trilogy. We'll be talking about the sequel trilogy, 7-8-9, with special guest Houston Coley. You might know him from his YouTube channel. Used to be called Houston Productions 1. Now it's just his name. We'll link that below so you can check out his videos before you listen to that episode. But it's a very fun episode, and I can't wait for you all to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, until next time, I'm Noah.
And I'm Kayla.
And I'm Pernell.
And we're
rotten to the core.